Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, you're listening to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast. Today I have an expert in tangible property regs, which if you don't know what that is, then you really need to listen because this is money in your pocket. His name is Kevin Jerry, and I just want to say, hey, thank you, Kevin Jerry, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Kevin, Kevin, you've been doing this for quite a while, and he's an expert. He's a master in taxation. But why don't you just give a thumbnail sketch for everybody of kind of what you do and, more importantly, why you do it?
Sure. What our firm does is restructure depreciation on buildings, and it's called cost segregation, where you separate the property that can be removed from a building as opposed to the structure of the building. And the benefit to the client is a shorter depreciation life for many of the assets, which means a larger tax deduction up front. About 5 years ago, new regulations came out, which are actually the biggest tax change for our industry since 1986. And we focused on those regulations because they're extremely taxpayer friendly. But what we find is that 90 to 95% of building owners and investors have never heard of them. And if they have heard of them, they don't understand them. But again, they are very, very taxpayer friendly. Like you said, it's money in the client's pocket to understand these. And I do it because I love it. And it's a lot of fun. And I make a lot of friends helping owners and investors save money.
Yeah, now this is stuff that, so it's the tangible property regs, what, they came out in 2014, 2015, right around there?
Yep.
Turn the world on its head for, especially in real property, right? When you add, you look at cost seg, you look at the accelerated depreciation, all those things that used to be kind of important now became extremely important. Is that a fair statement?
That's very, very fair, especially after the Tax Cut and Job Act of 2017, restructuring depreciation to create a more of a front-loaded tax deduction, you know, really our business just exploded. But these regulations in 2014 that came out are basically for assets currently in service. And when you make a repair or do an expenditure on a building, these regulations determine whether you have to take that expenditure, spread it over 27 and a half years or 39 years, or if you can just expense it in year one. And obviously expensing it in year one is much better than having that that investment spread over 39 years.
So for someone who's not familiar with this stuff, you buy a building, you buy it for $1 million, you take the land out and you get to write off that building, depending on whether it's residential or commercial, over either 27 and a half years or 39 years. So you're taking 1/39th of a commercial building and you get to, that's a deduction for the year. And so it's not that great. Like you're out of pocket. Maybe you financed it, but you're out of pocket for that. What these regs do, and what I think that Kevin is going to be focusing in on is some of these things we can write off right now, a lot of these expenses. And so the first thing you do is you break the building down into components and you say, hey, can I write off any of these components over a shorter period of time? Is that fair?
Yes, you got it.
Right. And then there's other things, and this is what I really want to jump into, like a small single family house owner that's renting it out knows about these safe harbor of, you know, the $2,500. No matter what it is that I'm spending on, if the invoice is less than $2,500, I can write that off this year instead of calling it an improvement or a betterment and writing it off over that longer period of 39 years or 27 and a half years. What I really want to zero into is, are there more things like that? Are there more safe harbors?
There is. Yep, there are. There's actually three safe harbors. What you just talked about, Toby, is called the de minimis safe harbor. And like you said, as long as an invoice has an item on it of less than $2,500, generally that can be expensed. There's also a small taxpayer safe harbor. The IRS has done a great job lately with regulations and making them very small taxpayer friendly. And there's a safe harbor called the small taxpayer safe harbor. And what that is you take the cost of your building minus land, and you take the lesser of 2% of that cost or $10,000. So let's say your building costs $1 million, 2% of that, you know, would be over that $10,000. So you would take that, take $10,000 or 2% of the cost of the building. And every year you can do whatever you want to the building. And as long as you're under that 2% or $10,000, whichever is less, you can expense it. And that's kind of very misunderstood. And your CPA or your tax service has to opt into this every year. You just have to tell the IRS based on code section 263 small a, we are going to use this small taxpayer safe harbor. So you've got the de minimis safe harbor, like you said, $2,500 per invoice, but then you can also elect into the small taxpayer safe harbor so that you have a little bit greater leeway to do more to a building than just $2,500. And then there's a safe harbor called routine maintenance, which is by far the least understood of all these safe harbors in these regulations. And I've helped over 1,000 CPAs and tax attorneys try to understand this. But let's say you're doing a repair on your building, and let's say you're fixing a component that only has a 5-year warranty, and you know that you're going to have to do this again within the next 10 years because of warranty and industry practice, and you just the experience of you running a rental property, you can expense that as routine maintenance. And I don't care if that expenditure is $1 million. If based on your experience and industry standards and the warranty of the component being replaced, it's going to have to be replaced again, or at least the intent of replacing it again in the next 10 years, you can just expense that. And you would be surprised how few people are actually taking advantage of that, Toby.
What would be what are your better examples of that? So, like, I want to go into both the 2% and that once every 10 years. If something has a useful life of less than 10 years, we're going to bonus depreciate it anyway, aren't we?
Yeah, but sometimes, I mean, you know, the class lives set up for depreciation really has no bearing on real life. You know, Congress set it up as a budgetary situation. I mean, why 39 years? Why 27 and a half years? I mean, how did they actually come up with those numbers? But it came up where Congress decided, you know, looked at the budget and calculated how much they needed and changed the depreciation to longer lives. So that's kind of the beginning. But these regulations are set up so that we don't want to capitalize anything we don't have to. You know, yes, you could 179, but then you sell your building and 179 reduces basis and you end up kind of paying that back in taxes. But if you expense it, it's not on your depreciation schedule. There's no recapture. You're not paying anything back, and you take a one-time expense on it. Not only are you now compliant because the IRS is, you said you have to follow these regulations, so now you become compliant, but it's, you also, you know, have put money in your pocket and take advantage of regulations that are set up basically to help you and help you save money and help your business grow. You don't want to 179 it or depreciate it if you don't have to.
Yeah, 179 for those who don't immediately trigger is equipment. But if you sell that during its useful life, so even though you expensed it today, like it's, let's say it's a car and it's 5-year property, and you sell it in year three, that's ordinary income, the portion that the useful life that was left on that thing. So, like, if you sell that, just think of it this way, all that money you're bringing in is ordinary income. Whereas what Jerry's talking about, or Kevin is talking about, Kevin Jerry, is if you can expense it, you don't have a depreciation recapture. You don't have that same recapture rule. Is that a fair assessment?
Yep, that's very fair.
And that's huge for you guys because you're not looking at depreciation recapture at 25% or whatever your ordinary bracket is, up to 25%. What you're looking at is, hey, I literally get to expense this, and if I ever sell the building, I'm just looking at long-term capital gains, which I could, of course. Yeah, that's huge. That is huge. So I want to touch on that. Let's say that I'm in an area of the country. So I own properties all over the place. And let's just say a roof. Everybody says roofs are 20 years. That's not my experience. In some areas of the country, I'm replacing them every 10 years. If that's the case, could I choose to take that as an expense? And I know you deal probably with big apartment complexes and big buildings and things like that, but I'm just trying to make it small. Could I write that off as an expense and not have to worry about recapture?
Yeah, I don't want to dance around the issue, and I'm sure you hate this next statement.
It depends.
Words is it depends.
Yeah,
you know it depends. So I live in Arizona, and you know we have tile roofs which last forever.
Yep.
But I come from the Northeast where, you know, shingle roofs, you know, do not last 39 years or 27 and a half years. So let's say for the de minimis, it's not going to fall under the de minimis. It's going to be too expensive. Even the small taxpayer safe harbor, it's probably not going to fall under. But for routine maintenance, if the warranty on the roof is 10 years, and based on your experience as an owner or investor, you know this roof is only going to last 7 or 8 years, and you're going to have to replace it. As long as you're making a reasonable intent, and you're not just making a decision to save taxes, and that intent is reasonable, and you have industry standards and experience to back that up, yes, you can expense it. But let's say none of the safe harbors apply, you know, and you're just going down the road and you're like, you know what, this roof is going to last me 15 years, so I guess I'm stuck capitalizing it. And that is not the case, because there's three more steps that you can follow. And the IRS says, is the roof being repaired more than 2 years after it's occupied? And why 2 years? Well, the IRS says you can write off and expense items from a building as long as you own the building for more than 2 years. And I don't know how they came up with 2 years, but nonetheless, the idea is if the roof degraded before you owned it, you typically, there's really no way you're going to be able to expense that. But if the roof degraded while you owned it and you now repair it, that is a repair, and repairs can be expensed. So your example, Toby, is really interesting, because let's say you, and as long as you don't make that roof materially better, don't ask me what material is. It's very, very vague. They leave that up to the CPA to determine. But as long as you don't make the roof materially better, and it's done 2 years after the date of occupancy, there's a really good chance you can expense it, especially if you're only doing shingles. And that last step, I said there was three more. That last step is you can't affect more than 33% of all of the light components in that building. And I don't want to go off on a tangent and make things really complicated, but let's say I'll change the example. Let's say you're doing an HVAC repair, and you've got three compressors on top of your roof, and you only fix one. Now, it's not going to be the de minimis. It's going to be more expensive than safe harbor or the small taxpayer. You're not going to have to replace this more than 10 years. But as long as you don't make that compressor better, you just repair it and put it in its normal everyday operating condition where it is now, and you don't do more than two of them. So if you do one out of three, you're set. If you repair two of them at the same time, now you're at 66%. Now you've got to capitalize it. So there's all kinds of ways to get around capitalization as long as you understand what the structure is and the procedure is and the questions to ask, you know, yourself or your vendor before you even enter it into an agreement. I would say there's an 80% chance you can expense pretty much every repair that you do on a building as long as it's done 2 years after occupancy.
Right. So let's go through that one. That's very interesting. Can you replace it, or does it have to be a repair? So let's say I have a building here, and I have a building here in Vegas, and I think we have six big old 10,000, whatever they're called, 10,000 pound train, you know, big air conditioners, HVACs. And I tell you what, like every year, some of these are old, but every year it seems like we're having to do something with one of them. And they always say, like, here's what it would cost to fix it. Here's what it would cost to swap it out and replace it. I know I could still expense, but I would have to recapture at some point on some of that, depending on if I dispose of the building. But under these regs, are you saying that there's another alternative where I don't have to worry about depreciation recapture, or I don't have to worry about 179?
Yeah, and that's a great example. So let's say you don't want to repair these. You know, it's not worth repairing them. Your vendor says, you know, it's time to replace it. As long as you don't take the energy efficiency of that HVAC unit that's being replaced and make it materially better, as long as you're, and I'm not an air conditioning guy, but let's say, you know, you've got 1,500 BTUs or 2,000 BTUs, and you take it to 4,000 BTUs, you just made that component better, and you made it a lot better. Now you've got to capitalize it, or 179. But let's say you just tell the vendor, I don't want anything better. I just want it the exact same technology, the same BTU. If it's middle-of-the-road HVAC, replace it with a middle-of-the-road HVAC. And as long as you're doing one at a time, you can absolutely positively expense it.
And that's just ordinary necessary expense. I don't have to worry about if I sell the thing within 5 years. I don't have to worry about depreciation recapture. I just get to expense it.
You don't have to worry about anything. Expense it. It's defendable. As long as you didn't make it better, it was 2 years after occupancy, and you're not replacing more than one at a time, and you're only replacing less than 33% at one time, you can expense it. Now, the interesting thing about this is you can replace all of the units in your building over a given time, but as long as you're only replacing them kind of as needed, rather than, you know, your vendor may say, well, let's just replace them all at one time. And that's a big mistake, because now you've got to capitalize that. But if you swap them out one at a time as needed, you know, as they start limping along, you replace one at a time, you could replace them all in a year. But because your effort or your intent is just to replace the ones that are failing as needed, now that's a repair.
That's actually pretty cool. Now, let's take it, go back to the 2%. So let's say that building's worth $2 million. And I should make this more relevant. Let's say it's worth $1 million. And I'm spending, I don't know, I could spend up to $20,000 a year on that building and just call it safe harbor. I don't know what
most of the term. Yeah, small taxpayer safe harbor. But you have a $10,000 limit, Toby.
Yeah, it's $10,000. Right. So I would end up going down to the $10,000.
Correct.
And can I use that and use the 10-year repair as well?
Yes.
Or do I have to pick one?
You still have that. What I would say is if you're anticipating doing a large remodeling or an HVAC or roof, like you said, I would not apply the small taxpayer safe harbor, because you have that $10,000 ceiling that you just can't go over. So there, I would apply they're called capitalization or improvement rules that I just explained, the after 2 year rule combined with the not materially better combined with the less than 33% of all light components. I would utilize those regulations instead of the small taxpayer safe harbor. So I always opt into the de minimis. I opt into the small taxpayer, but I don't have to use them. And if you've got a large expenditure that you're forecasting, just don't even use that. You would expense it based on the capitalization rules that kind of are in addition to the safe harbors. The safe harbors were put in place as a kind of an administrative convenience for the IRS. But, you know, if none of the safe harbors apply, then you have those three other rules that we just talked about that you would use. So you can't do both, but you don't really want to do both.
Can you do
one or the other?
So you pick one or the other. Is it per property or per component, or is it per taxpayer?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's basically per trade or business or per property. Now, let's say you may have and we'll just focus on the small taxpayer for right now, but let's say you've got an apartment complex with 20 different standalone buildings that are not connected. Each building, you can utilize the $10,000 or 2% for each building. So if you've got, 20 buildings and they cost $20 million, each building would be $1 million, and you would apply the $10,000 to each building. So you have a lot of different options depending on the facts and circumstances of your entity and the facts and circumstances of the expenditure that for that.
That's really interesting.
Building.
That is really interesting. So I'm just looking at my toolbox of all the things that I have to pull out, and I have my de minimis, I have my 2%, I have my small taxpayer, I have the every 10 year, and I also have the ability to do a cost seg and use bonus depreciation, and I have 179, and I'm looking at all those tools, and they all have benefits and disadvantages, but I have all these different tools. And is that kind of what you do, is you're looking at it and you're evaluating and helping put numbers to those tools?
Yes, that's kind of exactly what we do. So based on the intent of the building owner and what he's going to be spending money on in the future, I help him forecast how to spend money, where to put the money, and help them expense as much as possible, and then get the vendor invoices done correctly, where we may be able to utilize the de minimis, the 2,500. And then we talk about, you know, will this have to be done in 10 years? And if none of the safe harbors apply, you're still in great shape because I don't want to repeat myself, but I'm going to. But as long as you don't make the component better, it's 2 years after occupancy, and it doesn't affect more than 33% of all the light components, you can still expense it. So you almost have six different chances, you know, which is pretty good. You're in Vegas. I'll take those odds all day long, is to have six chances to win. And that's kind of what we do and what I do in particular, is help not only going backwards and taking a look at things that may be capitalized, that if they were done today could be expensed. Well, the IRS allows you to go back and expense those, and that's probably another podcast. But moving forward proactively to be able to take those expenditures and that intent and that forecast and be able to apply one of those six chances to win, that's where I get my business from.
Wow. So I'm just kind of going through those. So the six chances to win. I love that.
I just made that up.
You ought to look at it. That's what we'll call it. Six chances to win. Tangible property regs. How do you know if your CPA knows what they're doing?
Yeah, that's a real good question. I would flat out ask them, you know, are you applying the tangible property regulations to my trade or business? And most likely they will be opting into the de minimis and opting into the small taxpayer safe harbor because their software, it's almost I don't want to oversimplify it, but it's almost like a check mark, you know, in their software where every year you opt into that. But the routine maintenance safe harbor, most CPAs don't understand that. And certainly the other three chances to win, they certainly don't understand that also. So the IRS, to be honest, did not do a good job in 2014 of really helping educate the tax community on how these things work. They put it out there. It actually took them 10 years to perfect these regulations, so they're going nowhere. But, you know, the tax community still feels that as long as I capitalize everything, you know, I'm going to I'll fly under the radar and I'll stay out of audit. But that's not necessarily the case, because if you're capitalizing things that should be expensed, you are no longer compliant with the tax code. And you're, as a building owner, you're overpaying your taxes. So you want to flat out ask them, are you using the six chances to win, because they'll look at you sideways. But if you say, are you using the safe harbor and the capitalization versus expense criteria to help determine whether my renovations can be depreciated or expensed? And that's just a yes or no. And if they say no, call Toby, he'll call me, and I will, for free, because I love this podcast, I will give them a 1 hour continuing education on the tangible property regulations to get them up to speed.
That's extremely generous. I don't say an hour, because our clients will literally put you on a timer. Just say initial consultation. I'm just going to save you some pain there. And so you can go backwards, right? You can, just because this sounds like, hey, if you didn't expense it and you should have expensed it, we should go back in time and go back 3 years and fix this if there's a reason. Now, if you filed it in good faith, you're not under an obligation to go back and amend, but you could go back and amend, especially if it saves you some money. Is that true?
Yeah, because what it is these regulations are a change of method of accounting. So in the past, before 2014, most CPAs would have a dollar limit. Well, if it's over $5,000, I'm going to capitalize it. Under $5,000, I'm just going to expense it. But in 2014, the IRS said, you can't do that anymore. You've got to follow these regulations. Mm-hmm. And so when you change a method of accounting going forward, at some point, the old method of accounting and the new method of accounting are going to meet. And they're going to usually meet in the previous tax year, and they're going to be inconsistent. You may have extra expenses or extra capital. And so there's a wide variety of problems that come up when two methods of accounting meet and they're inconsistent. So it's code section 481A, which says that you apply the new method of accounting to day one as if you've always done it. And then so everything is consistent. And in this case, or with cost segregation, you actually have a reduction of income of all those closed tax years. Because if you had done cost segregation or these from day one, all of those closed tax years, you'd have less income and less tax. And I'm paraphrasing the IRS, but they say, you know what? Don't open up the closed tax years. Don't amend the returns. Just pull all of the additional savings or additional tax. In this case, it's a negative 41A, which means it's a reduction in income, which is good. Mm-hmm. And so just pull all of that, those closed tax years, all the reduction in income, and just put it in the current tax year. We'll call it even, and we'll be done with it. And so that is called a negative 481A adjustment. And it takes a change of a method of accounting, which is going forward, takes it to day one, and then pulls it forward into the current tax year. And there's a form 3115 that's filed. We do all that for you, and you're off to the races.
Yep, perfect. And then, and if you do that, so if you're doing a cost seg, you're doing the change of accounting anyway. So if somebody did a cost seg, do you ever look back and say, hey, wait a second, not just cost seg, maybe some of this should be expensed, and we're going to take some of it that we grabbed as a out of the cost seg and expense it as opposed to accelerate the depreciation? And no, we just probably lost half of the audience out there. All it means is depreciation recapture, just remember, is taxable. Expenses are not when you when you sell the building. So if you're 1031ing or you're going to own it till you die, it's not going to matter to you. But if you're going to potentially sell that building at some point, or you're in a syndication or something like that, this could be really critical. So based off of that, could we actually go back and grab some of the expenses, even on a cost seg?
Yeah, you almost have to. So before you do a cost seg and, you know, you start allocating assets to different class lives, you got to make the determination if any of those assets can be expensed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before you even enter into a cost seg, before you even think about a cost seg, you've got to clean up your depreciation schedule, because if there's assets on there that are being depreciated that under the six ways to win rules could be expensed, you can go back and write them off, create a one-time large expense in the current tax year, and then take the rest and keep depreciating it. But yeah, it's a method change 184. I think now we just probably lost everybody. But it's that method change is that change of method of accounting, and it has to be done. You've got to get your fixed asset schedule and your depreciation right before you take that next step. Otherwise, the foundation, it's like a house, the foundation is very, very shaky. Let's get the foundation set, let's get it cleaned up, expense what we can, and what we can't, then we'll depreciate.
Fantastic. You know what, this is probably one of my favorite podcasts ever. Like, I could geek out with you all day long, because this stuff, I'm just, right now, my brain's spinning on so many different situations. And we know the tangible property, I've just never heard it put that way, and I'm going to steal the six ways to win, and that's what we're going to call this one. So just so you know, hey, how does somebody get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you? I know that we're going to put a link off of this, so anybody, you know, so don't worry about websites, because we're going to actually give them a link to get in touch with you. But if they just wanted to reach out to you, how would they do it?
Should I give you my phone number or email?
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever works. These people, my clients are smart, and they tend to be very good investors. And so they may just pick up the phone and say, hey, I was listening to a podcast and I heard you.
Pick up the phone and call me. And if you don't feel like calling me, you can text me. It's area code 502-216-5941. Again, 502-216-5941. I live in Arizona, so I'm on Pacific time.
So don't call you at 4 a.m.
You know, you can call, but I'm not going to answer. So leave a message, but nine times out of 10, I'll just pick up the phone and talk, because I love helping your investors. They are smart. I mean, I'm one of your loyal listeners, Toby, and you know, I'll do anything to help people understand these regulations that for once are in the taxpayer's best interest.
Yep, absolutely. And you need every little bit that you can to stay ahead of the game. Hey, I really appreciate it, Kevin, for joining us. I will also put all your information up. And I just want to say, like, I really appreciate you coming on. I know that time is valuable, and I really appreciate your time.
No, and I appreciate you ask great questions, and you know, I'll do anything to help. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.